At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio, episode 544, coming to you on Wednesday, June 19th. It is Juneteenth, and of course, we'd like to acknowledge the importance of this day and historic freedom, particularly in the South. But with that said, we're talking about the latest in USC football news, including a couple big decommitments for the Trojans, a update to the future USC football schedule. And in this week's Big 10 Minutes, we're going to get to know the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So lock in. It should be a good one. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Email address, rainoftroy@fanside.com. And our phone number, 818-643-7227. Second What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alisa D'Aretola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back for another week, getting closer and closer to college football season. Time is just coming around. The NBA finals are over. The Stanley Cup finals are getting really close between the Oilers and the Panthers, which means summer's basically here, right? Like, doesn't summer officially start in, what, 2 days?
All I know is that 1 month from now, we will be glued to our PlayStations, and I am very looking forward to that, so...
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
For once, yeah. I won't want the summer to go by super fast to get to football in the fall, because I want to just like live in the college football.
Veg.
25 of it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely veg.
I officially have PTO for that week, so we're all in.
I can't wait. I can't wait. We're gonna be all in on the game, as always. Stay glued to our YouTube channel. More content coming your way, including... video game coverage. We're going to be talking about the video game, putting out content revolving around the video game, probably streaming as well. So look forward to that kind of stuff, but still a lot to get to before we get to the true summer, because at least the Stanley Cup finals are still going. And that means now's the perfect time to sort of, you know, have a say. Are the Oilers going to come back? What do you think?
I hope they force a game seven. That's all I know. The NHL,
a hell of a bet.
The Stanley Cup final game seven is.
It'd be nuts if it happened. But we'll have to see. It's still sort of a long shot for the Oilers to come back. But of course, now's the perfect time for you to join in at DraftKings, because USC fans, DraftKings are offering up a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users during final season. New customers who sign up with the code RAINOFTROY and deposit at least $5 will receive a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 bonus on their first wager. What does that mean? All you got to do is place a bet at least to $50, and if you lose, you'll receive a $50 credit in bonus bets straight to your account, up to $1,500 buckaroos. You'll also receive one single game parlay reward every day. So use the code RAINOFTROY, as it not only gets you these bonuses, but directly supports this very podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code RAINOFTROY, all one word, REIGNOFTROY, Reign of Troy to maximize that first bet. The offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Alicia, a lot to get to on this episode, so let's start with the news, shall we? We got to start with recruiting talk. The Trojans are on the recruiting trail. Was it last weekend we talked about how big USC's recruiting efforts were? Big recruiting week that USC has had at the beginning of June. But a couple of little hiccups, a couple of big decommitments, including Georgia defensive lineman, five-star edge rusher Isaiah Gibson, the number 17 overall recruit. In the 24/7 Sports Composite, decommitted on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, it was five-star defensive lineman Justice Terry, who's the number two defensive lineman in 24/7 Sports positional rankings. Alicia, what gives?
To be fair, holding on to the commitment of two five-star defensive linemen from the state of Georgia for 9 months was always going to be a huge challenge for USC.
Mm-hmm.
Getting their commitments in the first place was impressive. Being able to see off the likes of Georgia and, you know, Alabama and Tennessee and all of the heavy hitters in the SEC was always going to be really, really, really difficult. Yeah. So on the one hand, you sort of see these decommitments and you think, well, them's the breaks when you are trying to recruit five stars from out of state. This is just what happens. You're going to take some swings. Sometimes you're going to hit, sometimes you're going to miss. You can't win them all, especially when you're trying to go out of state. What I think the bigger issue for USC is that to me, this is a broader issue that USC has that it's, I think it's very difficult to convince an 18-year-old to travel halfway across the world, across the country, to live in a place.
Basically the world.
Well, yeah. To live somewhere new.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have proven results. So if I'm, you know, Justice Terry, and I'm considering, like, am I going to go to Georgia where they've literally produced top five picks mm-hmm. at that position, where they have one of the best defensive lines in the country every year, where they have proven development? Or am I going to go to USC where crickets, you know, USC has not produced defensive linemen. USC has not recruited that position well enough. USC has not developed that position well enough. USC has not sent guys to the draft in that position in recent history. When USC was doing those things, they were getting huge hitting out of conference, out of state commitments mm-hmm. and signees.
Right.
Because you just have more cachet there. I don't think USC has cachet in this area, and I don't think USC will be able to consistently pull these kind of guys realistically until someone starts to produce results. So, like,
can I blame Coach Helton for this?
I mean, to a point, yeah. To a point, you can blame the previous regime. You can blame this regime and the Alex Grinch of it all. There are so many things that go into this, but like, to me, this is why this season is so important under Danton Lynn, under Henderson. It really comes down to, can you get the most out of Bear Alexander? Because the next year you can say, look at what we made Bear Alexander. Can you get the most out of Anthony Lucas? Because the next year you can say, look at what we made Anthony Lucas. Right. Can you develop guys like Elijah Hughes and Sam Green and Jide Abasiri and, you know, some of Braylon Shelby and all these guys, can you develop them and then be able to turn around to big out of state recruits that you're trying to go after and say, look at what these guys were and what they become, they became. You can't necessarily come to the, like, expect to pull these recruits until you can do that consistently as a football program, because recruiting is all sort of theoretical. Yes, you need to be able to connect on a personal level. You need to put in the work, all of that kind of stuff with your staff. But when it comes down to it, you don't even need to negatively recruit USC at this point. You just need to say, if you're Georgia, you just need to say, look at what we have produced and look at what they have produced. And it's kind of a trump card. So it's frustrating, but yeah. The reality is you can't do it now. Like, it has to come later.
I think that the interesting thing is in 2024, and this is the 2025 draft class, I mean, recruiting class, right? Like, it's different. You're not just recruiting based on prestige, which we know that SC has overall prestige, but not necessarily recent prestige, right? You're not just banking on that and having to recruit on that side of things. It's the NIL stuff too. And like, that makes a difference. That it's weird because there's this double-edged sword of, I think the NIL provides a pathway to be able to recruit without the track record of producing the talent that Georgia has. Because if there's guys who are motivated by NIL, then location doesn't matter. Then how good you are as a coach doesn't matter. Your ability to look back and say, these are all the guys at your position that are recruited doesn't matter. But that's only a small part of it. And that's one part in which SC is not excelling at. Not excelling at the NIL part. Not excelling at being a program that has the track record of producing guys, especially on the line of scrimmage. But especially in the state of Georgia. And so going out and getting these guys, if they were in Utah, if they were in Colorado and they were five-star guys, I think it would be different facing the in-state challenges of those states, right? Than facing the in-state challenges of literally the best program in the country, which Georgia objectively is, right? Like, mm-hmm. One of the things we're going to talk about, and we can kind of just get into it a little bit here, is ESPN just put power rankings through 2026. So the way they put it, this is not a one-year projection, but it sets out to predict the best college football during the next three seasons. So the way I look at it is, this is what the landscape of college football is right now. This is measuring how good your program is right now, not just the 22 projected starters that you have, right? Georgia is number one and USC is number 11. And I think 11 is not a terrible place to be in, given what SC has had to show for themselves the last, 5 years, 15 years, essentially.
That's a playoff spot.
It's a playoff spot. But you're competing with recruits in the state of Georgia against the literal number one team, the team that produces the most NFL draft picks, that has the number one recruiting classes for years on end now. Like, this is really difficult, and you've got to be able to sort of land those guys. So on one hand, it's like, yeah, I get it. It's always going to be difficult. But on the other hand, like you said, you got to have you got to be able to recruit the guys that you know are sort of going to stick at some point too.
Yeah, and you have to put yourself in a position that you can find guys who will stick. You're not going to win every battle out of state. It's just not going to happen. Right. Sometimes you literally can't compete with, I get to stay near home. Like, you can't, what are you supposed to do? Say, don't be homesick. Don't be concerned about leaving your family.
Work with Ronald Jones.
I mean, yeah, but obviously it's
can not you imagine always a world that, not to derail this, but
he would have transferred in this day and age.
No, but he literally went home during camp. Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
Like, there was a world in which he never played for SC because he didn't come back to LA mm-hmm. during fall camp.
Yeah. And these are things that you can't, like, you can be the best recruiter in the world. You can have the best NIL in the world, and you could still sort of lose battles to that. But USC is currently in a position where they're not just losing battles to that. They're losing battles to the whole sort of picture. And you're right. Like, there are two main ways to recruit these days, is to have a track record where you can convince guys that they're going to be great playing for your school and you're going to put them in the NFL, or you can give them a bag. And to be frank, it doesn't seem like USC is willing to go out and give a bag.
They're not excelling at either one of those, and definitely not the combination.
Well, because they don't have the production to point to.
Right.
And it seems that they are unwilling to just go out and give a bag. Like, because USC could just say, whatever anyone else is going to give you, we will match it and exceed it. For defensive linemen of this caliber, USC could say that. I think that Oregon pretty much has that policy of we will give you X number of dollars because, you know, no matter what, we're going to make sure that you come. And I'm not saying that like in a negative. In today's day and age of NIL, you are competing against a market. And if you don't have the regional advantage, if you don't have the production advantage, one way you can level the playing field is by saying, yeah, but NIL will give you the biggest package. USC right. doesn't seem to be willing to do that for high school players, which I understand.
Here's my other question, though. And forgive me of any sort of ignorance here. I'm just going to speak on this on a very basic level here. Where is the misstep? Is it a misunderstanding of NIL? Is it a lack of buy-in from the boosters? You know, people say that, you know, just means more in the SEC. And I'm going to be quite frank that, like, that is factually true. Like, I know that, you know, I'm not saying the SEC fans don't care, but it is a different thing, right? Like, people in Georgia would put the Georgia Bulldog logo on their face if that was socially acceptable. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not sure that people are lining up at tattoo parlors in Newport Beach to do the same thing. But that's where the recruiting money is, right? And so we've heard things about a lack of, like, you know, booster investment. Is that a lack of faith in Lincoln Riley? Is it a lack of faith in USC? Is it a laissez-faire effort because sports and football don't mean as much in LA? Like, I don't necessarily think that SC doesn't, you know, SC people don't care, because SC people certainly care. But there's so much frustration about the lack of NIL stuff. But who's going to step up and fix the thing? Like, is it going to be boosters? Is it on Lincoln Riley to sell the message better? And like, do they have to produce on the field more in order for there to be more money? Like, how do you solve it?
USC screams from the mountaintops that their NIL program is just as good as anybody else in the country. I know that there are exceptions to this rule, because there are teams out there that have, you know, big money donors who will just feed money into the program endlessly. And that's the only thing that matters. USC doesn't seem to have that person or those people. And that is a limiting factor, but USC consistently points to the fact that they can be competitive in NIL. It's where they choose to
sort of
put their resources. Yeah. And what we have continually heard is that USC puts his resources towards players who have already sort of deserved it. They don't want to give a huge NIL deal to an 18-year-old kid who hasn't proven that they can play at the college level. And in some senses, I'm on board with that plan. I wouldn't want to waste money on a freshman who's going to come in, not play, and then just transfer out the next year because they're not playing. And right. then you just sort of wasted a bunch of money. Like, I'm sympathetic to this approach, but the flip side of that is, and I don't want to make, you know, Justice Terry and Isaiah Gibson make it out like it's just about money, but I think money would help in these situations.
Sure. I think it helps when, was it Justice Terry put out his tweet or something about, like, give me all you got?
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying that that's about NIL, but it's not about NIL.
Well, maybe, yes. But it seems that USC has NIL capabilities, but my guess is that they function more towards, less towards direct NIL through like donations and more towards brand deals and stuff like that, which USC would have a ton of that, but those are also limiting because you have to give those brands a reason to give your players brand deals. Like, Caleb Williams had no issues with NIL. He got every dollar that he wanted.
Yeah.
He was also
in a million commercials.
Yeah, like, because you can do that, but you know, not every player is Caleb Williams, and certainly not an 18-year-old kid from Georgia that no one's heard of except for like the deep recruit Knicks. So it's, you know, I think that it's a complicated situation that has more, that is not just USC doesn't have X amount of dollars. There's middle grounds there in terms of where USC is choosing to spend his money, whether or not that's the wise way to go. The downside of all of this is that when you have a five-star guy who is interested in playing for Eric Henderson and you're not willing to sweeten the pot, you risk losing that five-star guy. You could also sweeten the pot all you want and still lose that guy. Like there's so many different situations there that just get way more complicated than people want to acknowledge. But yeah. Like, to me, you have to be able to find a balance. And USC doesn't have that balance because, again, USC doesn't have can't point to the recent production, can't point to a track record, chooses not, at least in my understanding of the situation, chooses not to use NIL as leverage, at least not as like big time leverage. And so they get sort of caught in this no man's land where the only way that you're going to convince a kid to come is to have them buy into your sort of the legend of USC and the vibes and all that kind of
and
stuff.
And that
does work on some guys.
It does, but it's fading. I mean, you look at it, it's 2024. The kids that are born in the 2025 class would have been born in what, 2007? 2008, depending on 17, 18, whatever they are.
They wouldn't have watched the Pete Carroll era.
No. Like, they grew up they were a kid when Sam Darnold was winning the Rose Bowl still. And yeah, maybe that helps, but also they were in their formative years when Kirby Smart was still at Georgia, right? Like, that is going to be a, you know, completely different thing. Maybe they grew up when Keely Ringo is their number one player instead of Reggie Bush or whatever it is. Right. So yeah, I think it's tough. I think the NIL being a factor, the weird thing too is like, if NIL is such a big factor, then that means that the possibility is always theoretically open. And maybe that's a way to lie to yourself too, that it could be open because you could come into it of like the looking at it in like a video game of like, yeah, but I'm gonna have the money before signing day to be able to woo this guy, and whether or not that, you know, that works or not, you have to lie to yourself and pray. But I don't know, I think the way you look at it, recruiting is so different. We got a question from Greg in the chat that says, do you agree that when Riley said that the NIL has taken monster leaps, like I don't know that I know anything. Like,
it's a totally different dynamic for Juju Lewis, though, because USC does have track record to point to for Juju Lewis. If you're a quarterback, and he literally has said it, I'm coming to USC for Lincoln Riley. Like, Lincoln Riley's cachet with quarterbacks is the make or break there. Like it's totally different for, like, people can be interested. I think the fact that Justice Terry and Isaiah Gibson were even looking at USC speaks to Eric Henderson and his NFL Aaron Donald Rams thing. Like, that's a nod to that, but we still don't know that he can produce NFL talent from the college ranks. So yeah.
Yeah. The way I look at it is, you know, has the NIL taken monster leaps forward? I don't know, mostly because the recruiting world is so different now than it was years ago. And I'm the first person to admit that I feel so out of my depth talking about recruiting at this point. And like, I think it's easier I don't know about you, but like, from my perspective, it's easier to leave so much of the recruiting stuff to the guys over at USCfootball.com who are so deep in the trenches on this, when it is so different than it ever was before. It's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up with everything. And you got the transfer portal on top of that. The NIL factor is so different. We've talked about it before, that you can think that you understand NIL, And every individual school can think that, but then maybe you don't actually know because the rules are all, you know, chaotic and no one actually knows. It's a lot like Formula One and the new rules, and it's the interpretation of the new rules, and you have to hope that you nailed it right. And maybe you think you nailed it right, but you didn't. And I don't doubt that Lincoln Riley can feel confident in his NIL skills or his NIL arsenal and it still not be good enough compared to everybody else. But I'm not the arbiter of how true that is. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, and I think there's a lot of assumptions about NIL across the country. I think there's a lot of confusion about NIL across the country. I don't think it makes any of this clarity. Like it doesn't help with the clarity of anything. But that's why, to me, you know, I agree with you. We're not the recruiting experts. I'm one of those people who used to be really into recruiting, and I've sort of fallen out of interest with it because it's just, you know, what does it matter if Justice Terry commits or signs or anything like that? Like, you know, any of these players might end up in the transfer portal next year. Like it's I'm not even getting particularly invested in Juju Lewis because it's like, well, he could just be Malachi Nelson in a couple of years. Who the heck knows?
Sure.
But that's why, to me, I focus on the development side of things, because
which I think is why it sort of like talking about, you know, SC not putting for a video game analogy here, the recruiting points in necessarily kids, the incoming recruits, as much as they are in the transfer portal side of things. I think there's a lot of logic there, right? Because it does make logical sense to put more of your trust in people who are proven at the college level. The problem then becomes those are the guys who have less term, less eligibility when they get to USC. So it's a give and take there. And then the flip side of this is I go back to the Yankees in the mid 90s. Everyone says that the Steinbrenner's Yankees bought their World Series rings. They didn't. Go look at those teams of the that won, what was it, four rings in 5 years. Jeter, Bernie Williams, Posada, Rivera, they were all homegrown guys. Well, but like those are guys. The comparison would be those are the recruits that they signed without needing to go to the transfer portal.
You have to be able to do both. Realistically, yes. You have to develop the guys that you bring in, and you have to spend when you have the opportunity to spend. Now, like I said, I'm sympathetic to if USC's plan is to take the guys they have on the roster, to take the recruits that they are able to convince to come join this project, develop the crap out of them, get them into the NFL, get them nationally recognized, all of that kind of stuff, because they coach them well, and then spend big on the big transfer that becomes available. Spend big on the Jordan Addison, spend big on the Caleb Williams, spend big on the, you know, on a Bear Alexander or somebody like
did,
that.
Did you see the new transfer SC swimming gun?
No.
They just got a guy who's like a 6-time All-American.
Yeah, like that kind of when those kinds of players come around, to be able to go out and get them to supplement a roster that you have already developed, and then also spend your NIL resources on making sure that the guys that you are developing don't leave. So you make sure that they're happy, comfortable, and you know, kicking at USC. I think that could be a path to success. Mm-hmm. But it's a plan that has to then hinge on whether or not you can actually coach the guys up, which is the hard part.
Well, this is the Calipari issue that we've discussed before. Yes. Of like, you know, Calipari went all in at Kentucky on the one and duns, which it makes sense that I think that the highest possibility of your success is to get the best talent bar none.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you also have to sprinkle in those guys with the 3 and 4 year starters, especially the way college basketball is now. Not to make too many different comparisons of other sports, but you got to be able to do both, because you know when SC is in a spot where they're not recruiting necessarily great in states, the top offensive lineman in the state of California, Jackson Lloyd, 4-star out of Carmel, just committed to Alabama. Mind you, Northern California, practically probably should be another state, but hey.
Right, but California. Northern California is a hell of a lot closer to Southern California than it is to,
yes,
than it is to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which I think is a much, much bigger issue. Like, I can understand how you lose the Georgia defensive lineman. Disappointing, right. But like, there are many, many reasons why that happens.
Is there a bigger culture shock going from Carmel to Tuscaloosa? My God.
I know, yeah. No, my bigger issue, and this is where I think USC genuinely has a big, big, big problem, is that, you know, you can miss out of state guys. USC is missing in-state guys too.
Right.
Like way too much. Like you mentioned Jackson Lloyd, who just commits to Alabama. This recruiting cycle, USC has one commit from the top 15 players in California. Last recruiting cycle, one signee from the top 15 players in California. The year before, four from the top 15. To put that into perspective, in 2014 and 2015, Sark, who is a very, very strong recruiter, who knows what he's doing in that on that front, and it's helping him greatly at Texas because he's found a way to do both again. He had 7 and 6 of the top 15 in 2014 and 2015. USC had half of the best players that were coming out of California. The top talent in the trenches, USC's greatest positions of need, they're leaving Los Angeles. Last year, Aiden Breland from Notre Dame leaves for Oregon. Brandon Baker from Notre Dame, the top offensive lineman in the state, goes to Texas. 2023, Mateo Uiagalelei out of Bosco goes to Oregon. Collins, I'm going to struggle with the name, but Akiempong, I don't know if I said that right. Whatever. He, from Rancho Santa Margarita, he goes to Miami, then transfers back home to UCLA.
Yeah.
The top offensive lineman, Elijah Jackson, Jacket, goes to Washington. In 2022, USC lets Ernest Green from Bosco go to Georgia. They let Hiro Kanu from Santa Margarita go to Ohio State. Like, and if you notice there, a lot of Notre Dame's and Bosco's in there. The top California programs in terms of high school football right now are Notre Dame and St. John Bosco. Notre Dame guys are not looking at USC. This year, Wyatt's going to Oregon. Darius Dixon is going to Penn State. Chuck McDonald to Alabama. Jordan Davidson is crystal balled to Ohio State. Last year, Xavier Brown goes to Alabama. Aiden Breland goes to Oregon. Brandon Baker to Texas. Nate Frazier to Georgia. Elijah Brown to Stanford. DeAndre Carter to Auburn. Bosco guys are leaving. USC did get Marcellus Williams, and it looks like he's a good pickup. But, you know, Peyton Woodyards goes to Alabama. There's just all of these local pipeline schools that should be coming to USC. As Roger Dodger in the chat says, KVA, Kingston Bilamu Asa is going to Notre Dame. These are the guys that should be building USC's roster. These are the guys that USC should be foundational in their roster that then they supplement with the big money guys that are coming in the transfer portal or coming from out of state. And they're all walking to Oregon and Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State, the true contenders for national titles. That's the problem. You know, you can miss out on Justice Terry and you're fine. You miss out on all of these modern day kids, all of these Bosco kids, all of these Centennial kids. The rare, Long Beach Poly isn't popping them out the way that they used to, but the top guys from Long Beach Poly, the top guys from Sarah, the top guys from all of these local programs, you should have these guys in the bag. Because you have the local advantage. You have the, you get to stay close to home.
Especially the way that we talk about the guys from Georgia, right? Like, you talk about the guys from Georgia and you just kind of assume they're just going to go to Georgia. And the schools outside of California do not have that view about the guys from the, you know, former SC pipelines, right?
Yeah. It's open season.
Yeah. We got a question from Ben that says, do you think the move to the Big Ten has also turned off kids in California? I don't think it's turned off kids in California. No. I don't know how much of that has actually sort of played a role, but I do think that, like, this goes beyond the Big Ten stuff. I mean, we've been talking about SC missing the local guys since Clay Helton was around, right?
Can I blame Coach Helton for this?
Remember, SC missed on Sean Ryan. They missed on Jonah T. And Jonah T was a guy who never did anything for Oregon, right? But he was a guy out of two-time CAF state champ Narvon that was at USC like every day.
Every weekend.
And he still went to Oregon, right? Like, you miss on the guys that are in your backyard, especially at a key position like the offensive line. Sean Ryan is someone who absolutely could have been helpful for USC on the offensive line. Put him next to Voorhees and AJT and all those guys, ABT and all those guys. Like, it would have been huge for SC's offensive line. Didn't get him, right? Like, that's really where it sort of started. I don't know that the lack of the of local games is turning people off there, especially when these guys are leaving California to play across the country. So it's not like the location of their games is shown to matter in their decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that that's sort of it. I think Lincoln Riley's, everything that he said is that it's not about where a recruit is from, it's about the recruit. And I think that that logic makes a lot of sense. There's a reason that Pete Carroll went out of state. He always talked about you go out of state for first round draft pick talent. And yes, that makes total sense. Just get the best guys. And the problem is that SC is not consistently getting the best guys, because when the truth comes to be at the end, if SC had great recruiting classes, nobody would care where those kids were from. If they all went to Thomas Aquinas and inserts Georgia High School here, and they went to Allen and wherever high school around the country, nobody would care. If they went to USC and won games, nobody would care that they weren't modern day guys and they weren't Sarah guys and Bosco guys,
right,
and,
but when-
and Pauly guys. But when you're not getting the out-of-state guys and not getting the local stuff guys, and a season in which you just went 7-5 and fell flat on your face, that's just going to ramp up all of the frustrations, because the in-state guys are the ones that were easy to take advantage. I mean, take for granted for decades.
That's the problem, is that, you know, it's not as simple as this, but we'll use the video game analogy again. You only have so many recruiting points. And if you're spending a lot of recruiting points trying to pull guys out of enemy territory,
yeah,
you're not investing those points in,
yeah,
keeping your own guys home. Mm-hmm. And theoretically, you should have to spend fewer recruiting points to keep your own guys home.
Yeah.
But you can't spend no recruiting points keeping your own guys home. You know, like, it's not that simple, but these are major concerns. And these are things that I think that Lincoln Riley needs to answer for. His staff needs to answer for. The reality is that USC can answer a lot of these questions if they go out and run good systems and play good football and develop good players.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think the recruiting follows. But right now, USC is going to be in for a lot of criticism because they don't have the good track record, and they don't have the recruiting, the big, big recruiting success. USC is still recruiting good. And that's the thing, is USC is recruiting good players. Like, USC's roster is full of guys that we have a lot of hope for. But like, the sure things are the issue. You gotta develop the guys that you have hope for.
Yeah.
And then you can turn things around on the recruiting trail without having to go out and just, you know, spend NIL money out the wazoo.
Yeah, let's talk about that ESPN Future Power rankings that we mentioned earlier. Trojans are 11th in the country in that. But I think the interesting thing is looking at where other teams are. Oregon is 6th. Notre Dame is 7th. Utah, who's no longer in USC's conference anymore, they're in the Big 12, they're 14th. And I think those three schools are interesting, because I think in a lot of ways, SC and Notre Dame are very similar. You know, both will tell you that they're national brands. I think it's probably more true for Notre Dame than it is SC, but both are big blue blood programs who, you know, haven't been winning national titles lately, but still have the ability to compete with the other schools, right? But Notre Dame being ahead of SC is a problem. I think that, you know, SC went out and got Lincoln Riley, and Notre Dame promoted from within a guy who probably wasn't fully ready in Freeman because they trusted him and believed in him and didn't want to let him go. Right. Their program being ahead of SC is probably not ideal for the situation. Yeah. SC's 11th, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but you don't want them ahead. And you don't want Oregon ahead because Oregon essentially becoming, and I know that this is a phrase that is not going to make people happy to hear, but like Oregon becoming the premier brand for college football on the West Coast is insane. It's insane that SC has allowed that to happen. Right?
Yeah, that and
it's hard to argue that it's not the case.
USC fans are only going to get to use the zero national titles thing for so long because the moment Oregon breaks through for that, then, you know,
SC has zero in the last 20 years. So,
what's still more than Oregon, but you know, the point is that Oregon is a hell of a lot closer to a national title right now than USC is, and that's the issue with these rankings is that USC is 11th, but the gap between 5th and 11th in terms of national title readiness
feels
is
pretty big.
Massive.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Ohio State number 2, by the way, Michigan 5.
Yeah. And the college football playoff, we don't know what 12 teams looks like. We don't know how many, like, will that be chalk most years? We don't know yet. Will it be chaos? We don't know yet. So, you know, things are certainly going to get interesting, but USC won't compete for national titles until they get the trenches sorted out, and they won't get the trenches sorted out. This is sort of chicken and egg until they start getting more out of what they have in the trenches.
Yeah. Roger Dodger says Oregon in 109 years has 15 All-Americans all time. What is SC doing? I hear what you're saying, but doesn't that just make the point that Oregon has figured out the recruiting game more than SC? Like
right now? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because again, kids do not care that you were a national title team in 1974.
Before they were even the kids that USC is recruiting now weren't alive when USC last won their national title. Right. So,
yeah. All right. Let's get to the other news, the other big news, which is the change of USC schedule. We talked about it a couple weeks ago that there was a report that SC had been trying to get out of that LSU game. Well, guess what? SC is out of the Ole Miss game. The home and home 2025 and 2026 USC and Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin coming back to the Coliseum. Next year was going to be so fascinating because both Lane Kiffin and Clay Helton were going to come to the Coliseum as opposing coaches. No longer happening, at least for Lane Kiffin. Not coming because the Ole Miss home and home is off the schedule. The 2025 schedule still for SC includes Notre Dame at Oregon, Michigan, Nebraska's in there. 2026, SC's going to have to face Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon, and Washington. Gulp. So it, again, logically makes sense that SC wouldn't want to keep having two big-time names on the out-of-conference schedule in Notre Dame and Ole Miss. We talked about this with the LSU conversation earlier. I think it makes total rational sense that Lincoln Riley would not want to have that on the schedule. At the same time, being part of a canceled game will always make it look a way that allows people to say that you're soft and scared and weak and all those things. That shouldn't matter. But that perception is always going to exist.
Well, I mean, Ole Miss, the announcement has come that this was a mutual parting of ways. And
sure.
I get why Ole Miss does that, too, because they've got Wake Forest, Tulane, Georgia, Oklahoma, Florida, LSU. Like, they have a tough schedule in 2025. They'll have a tough schedule in 2026. The current realignment situation, the current state of college football, means teams are incentivized to not do home and homes against marquee power four opponents. It just
four. It seems weird.
I know it's weird. It is the way it is, but this is the reality. For me, I am not like a doom and gloom person about realignment. I think in the end, college football will still be really, really fun and still give us plenty of things that we're going to love. But I will admit this is, to me, this is the kind of thing that's a big bummer because the home and home is one of, to me, one of the great scheduling elements of college football as I knew it. Mm-hmm. Being able to look forward to, oh, USC's going home and home with Ole Miss, or USC's going home and home with Nebraska, or USC's going home and home with Texas, or, you know, those marquee games where you wouldn't necessarily.
There's no other reason to
you wouldn't. Go there, right? Yeah, we would never be going to Vaught Hemingway. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's Oxford. There's no reason.
We were going to go to Memphis because to get to Ole Miss, you got to fly into Memphis. Barbecue nachos?
Yeah.
Barbecue nachos are the number one thing to eat in Memphis? Oh, my God. Like, can you imagine?
It's going to be, you know, great trips. You know, the Austin trip for Texas was an incredible trip. I mean, the game wasn't good, but the game doesn't have to be good if you're going to these college towns where you can.
I mean, the game still, you want this.
I mean, you want the game to be good, but that was still a great trip from my perspective, even though USC lost, because the winning and losing isn't the end all be all of whether or not that trip is fun.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things.
The flip side, though, is being in the Big Ten and being new to the Big Ten means that all of these trips against new conference foes are going to feel like out of conference games.
Right, but that's
And there's so many teams in the Big Ten that you're not going to play them that often, mm-hmm. which I think will keep it fresh. So it's not like you're going to, like, as much as we talk about how great it was that you could just drive to Tempe every other year, mm-hmm. Because it's a 5.5 hour drive. Well, you're going to go to Ann Arbor every 4 or 5 years or whatever it is, but that's going to keep it fresh. Even if you're going to go to Purdue, like, well, I haven't been to Purdue in a long time, so I'm going to go to Purdue this time, right? Like, whatever it is, I think that'll at least keep it fresh for a little bit. Either way, it's a bummer not to have big home and homes, but you have to remember SC plays Notre Dame. That's a home and home. It's a non-conference game. I know it's easy to feel like it feels like a obligatory conference game because it's on the schedule every year, but technically. Out of conference.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about guys who are in conference. The Nebraska Cornhuskers. We got 10 minutes. Let's go.
A big 10 minutes.
Let's talk about the Nebraska Cornhuskers, founded as the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in 1869. Well, originally University of Nebraska until 1968, when the university sort of swallowed up the University of Omaha to create the University of Nebraska system, which then changed the name of the University of Nebraska to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and then Omaha became the University of Nebraska-Omaha. Basically, you know, the UC system, but in Nebraska, you get it. Of course, Nebraska is in Lincoln, Nebraska. They are the Cornhuskers. According to Huskers.com, Nebraska football teams of the 19th century were known by such name as the Old Gold Knights, the Antelopes, the Rattlesnake Boys, and get this, the Bug Eaters.
Oh, the Rattlesnake Boys and Bug Eaters.
The Bug Eaters.
That's a missed opportunity.
Bug Eaters, so
how
good.
How is there not a minor league baseball team already called the Bug Eaters?
There's got to be. local sports writer Cy Sherman did not like the name Bug Eaters.
Get out of here.
But he was a fan of Iowa's early names because Iowa early on was called the Cornhuskers. So when Iowa went all in on Hawkeyes, he's like, hey, let's take Cornhuskers. So in 1900, he started saying Cornhuskers in his columns, and it stuck. It eventually got co-opted by the state as the official nickname after the football team. So it's sort of the inverse of what other Big Ten schools have done, where Iowa's the Hawkeye state they're the Hawkeyes because of the Hawkeye state, and Indiana's the Hoosiers because of the Hoosier state. No, they are literally the Husker state because of Nebraska football. One weird Nebraska fact.
Well, because of Iowa football.
They stole it, and corn grows in Nebraska and Iowa. One weird Nebraska fact, despite being the University of Nebraska, Nebraska, of course, goes by NU. And so there's a lot of places, former Big Eight schools. This sort of stems from Big Eight traditions, Midwest colloquialisms, resulting in Colorado being incorrectly referred to as CU. Kansas incorrectly calls themselves KU, Missouri, MU, Mizzou, on, all those Big Eight schools. Incorrectly called their teams Nebraska U, and it even stuck to the one of their fight songs. There is no place like Nebraska includes the phrase, dear old Nebraska U. Again, technically incorrect. This is, I guess, like SE having Southern Cal in a lyric or something like that. Let's talk about the fight song, Hail Varsity. These are the revised lyrics from 2023. Hail to the team, the Scarlet and Cream. Cheers for a victory. Echo our loyalty. So on, U of N. Let's triumph again. Fight on for victory. Hail Varsity. A little fight on in there.
Another fight on.
Yeah.
Some nice rhyming schemes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dig it.
I love There Is No Place Like Nebraska, which is sort of their other fight song, battle cry, whatever you want to call it. There's no place like Nebraska, dear old Nebraska, you where the girls are the fairest and the boys are the squarest of any old school that I know. There's no place like Nebraska where they're all true blue. We all stick together in all kinds of weather for dear old Nebraska, you. That is a banger. Absolute banger. Let's talk about who has been a Husker. How about Warren Buffett, the Uber billionaire? He's a Husker. Blackjack, John J. Pershing, the decorated World War I general of the armies, the very first general of the armies of the United States, the namesake for Pershing Square in downtown L.A. How about Frank W. Sear, the father of the yellow school bus? He invented the yellow school bus. Look at that. Montgomery Case designed the George Washington Bridge. Charles Purcell designed the Bay Bridge. Look at the
bridge,
Huskers just
bridge guys
being a bridge university all of a sudden. Jerry Thomas invented the TV dinner, which I think is fitting because I always think of Nebraska as sort of being like where like Tyson is. I think Tyson is in Nebraska, like the chicken people, Tyson chicken. Harry Culver, the founder of Culver City, went to Nebraska. Carlos Ulmanis got a BS in Nebraska in 1909, then became the first prime minister of Latvia. That's kind of cool. Johnny Carson went to Nebraska. Everyone's favorite ESPN reporter of all time, Shelly Smith. She's a Husker. Olympic wrestler Rulon Gardner is a Husker. Laker and Clipper legend Tyronn Lue, a Husker. And Angel greats Darren Erstad, a Husker. Alicia, when you think of Nebraska fans, what do you think of?
Very, very loyal. They travel well. They have great attendance, even though their team has not given them a good reason to attend for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you know how St. Louis Cardinal fans do the circle jerky thing, best fans in baseball BS? Mm-hmm. I think they imagine that they're actually Nebraska fans. Like Nebraska fans, I legitimately think are the best fans in college football. Their loyalty, they're nostalgic, but like also aware of the weirdness that, which we'll get into, which is, well, the first thing you think of Nebraska is the football team. They were the powerhouse. I think it is crazy if you are Gen Z, Gen Alpha, and you're trying to, like, you're getting to college football, you just got admitted to SC last week, and this is your first podcast, and you're like, I got to get into listening to SC because I just got admitted or whatever. And you're like, Nebraska, I've never heard of them. When we were kids, Nebraska was Alabama, the pinnacle of football. They literally were what Alabama was. 1995 Nebraska, up there with 72 SC and 2001 Miami as being arguably the greatest team ever. In 95, the Huskers won every game by at least 14 points. They beat number 2 Florida 62-24 in the Fiesta Bowl to win the national title. Tommy Frazier had that infamous run in which he broke 84 tackles. I think he's still breaking tackles and still running down the field in Tempe. How about Matt Davison's catch in 1997? Remember this? Against Mizzou, tipped up and basket caught in the end zone. Remember this?
Now I know what you're talking about.
I was at the Coliseum. SC was playing Stanford that same day, and I was listening on the radio. And like the radio people were freaking out that you have to see this. And then I saw it when I got home. It was wild. But
back in the days when we would wait up and wait for SportsCenter to show all the highlights.
Yeah, just to see the highlights. Yeah. No. Nebraska in the 90s, basically so good. You remember how good they are because of the times that they lost. Like in 96, when they lost to ASU 19-0 in Tempe, there's the Chris Brown game in Boulder, losing to Colorado 62-36. Those were like shocking, iconic moments. You remember where you were because Nebraska lost what? Five-time national title winners. Nebraska, they won in 70, 71, 94, 95, 97. Three Heisman Trophy winners, Johnny Rogers, Mike Rozier, and Eric Crouch. All-time series against USC is 4-1-0. The Trojans have never lost to Nebraska, including a year in which Nebraska won the national title, 1970. USC and Nebraska tied 21-21 at the Coliseum as the Huskers went on to win the AP national title. Talked about home-and-home series. Well, SC played a home-and-home in 2006 and 2007. 2006 game, I, of course, remember, unfortunately, for the Ryan Poudrell injury. Remember that?
That's an all-time cringe.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. But also possibly my favorite Pete Arbogast call of all time.
Long drop for Booty. Throwing for Garrett. He's got a touchdown, USC! He beat Andre Jones, the mouth that roared, and the Trojans have the lead.
The mouth that roared, Andre Jones. A Fresno JUCO transfer to Nebraska basically guaranteed a victory in the midweek. SC won 28-10. The following year, the Trojans were number one in the country in 2007, went into Lincoln and shellacked them. They were up 42-10 going into the fourth quarter, outgained them on the ground 313-31. That was a dominant Pete Carroll showing. SC won the game 49-31. Not much time here. We got to run. Only a minute left. Holiday Bowl 2014, SC beat Nebraska. Next USC-Nebraska game this year, November 16th, is USC's homecoming game against Matt Rhule. Year two at Nebraska. We think highly of Matt Rhule, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly because what he does in year two and three. Temple, he went from 2-6 to 6-6 to 10-4. Baylor, 1-11, 7-6 to 11-3. Last year, Nebraska was 5-7. What are they going to do in year two? 19 returning starters. Kind of scary. Kind of scary. Like, I think there's a world in which Nebraska is a serious team to be reckoned with both later on this year and next year. So keep an eye on
his quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep an eye on that. So that's Nebraska. Here as we wrap up the Big Ten Minute on the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Bam. Nice.
Got it all in. Greg says, is corn your guys' favorite vegetable?
I love corn.
I'm more of a broccoli guy, but now that I think about it, corn everything is good. What's something corn related that's bad? Corn syrup. Love corn syrup.
I mean, cream corn is one of my favorite things on the planet.
The cream of corn at Lowry's?
Corn on the cob is always wonderful.
Corn casserole?
Corn bread?
Corn chowder? Corn bread?
Yeah. Wait, corn tortillas? Corn might be my favorite vegetable. Now that we're saying it.
Love me some corn.
Corn is great. This is making me want corn on the cob, dude. It's starting to feel like summer. We need a barbecue with some corn on the cob.
I haven't been able to eat corn on the cob because I have
your retainer.
I have a retainer. Shout out to my orthodontist, Dr. Allman, proud Trojan. But I'm getting that thing removed next week, which means I can have corn on the cob
again. Corn on the cob time. Let's go.
Wow.
Oh, wait. Tim in L.A. No, you ruined it, bro. Candy corn. That's the worst.
I'm telling you. Candy corn.
The worst version of corn is candy corn.
Candy corn is good for about the first three.
You have really good food takes.
I know. Yeah. No. Really good for about the first three. When you get to the fourth, you're like, this is starting to turn. You get to about the sixth candy corn, you're like, this is actually gross. So you can't have a handful.
I would rather think about corn on the cob, like Greg says, butter on the corn on the cob. For me, it's
a little butter, a little pepper.
For me, I go back and forth because I love butter with some Parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
Or I love mayo with some Parmesan.
Mayo.
If I could figure out how to like do a half butter, half mayo.
You do like
mayo,
like elote?
No, I don't do elote.
Well, elote is mayo, isn't it?
Yes, but they put like
the tagine or
whatever that is, which I don't like.
Yeah. You're not very Mexican, are you?
No. Can we do a corn themed barbecue? Ooh, my mom just got. Well, no, my sister-in-law at a wedding shower got this corn like corn tablecloth. Isn't it corn? We should do a corn themed barbecue.
I'm in. As long as you don't have corned chips, beef.
Tortilla chips. We could do a corn salsa. We could do corn on the cob. Corn bread.
Oh, corn bread. I'm in.
I'm actually, this is going to happen. I'm going to do this.
All right, let's get to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
We got a Discord message from Parker. Had to join the Discord. Welcome, by the way, Parker.
Welcome.
We're glad to have you.
Also, welcome to Jessica, who just subscribed in the middle of the show.
So. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jessica. Parker says, I had to join the Discord because of the all-time offense for Riley episode. I have a burning question for you. If you did the reverse and Lincoln Riley wasn't the coach, but it was student body right or triple option loving head coach, how would the selection change? That's very good. I think the receivers would have to change.
Well, I think our flex, my flex choice would change. I think I would.
Are we limiting this to this century? Is that still the bit? Like we're going to do this century, but the coaches of the old century?
Oh,
that would be interesting.
That would be interesting. Okay, yeah. But
either way.
So I would go with more, obviously, just like a heavier set. I would go with Rojo as the running back, and I would actually have a fullback.
Two running backs and a fullback?
Yeah, my wide receiver choices might be slightly different because I might prefer size and strength more than anything. Although it's not like you're missing size and strength, Mike Williams. And like,
this is going to be weird, but roll with it. My receivers would be Mike Williams and Darius Rogers.
Ooh.
Darius Rogers and Juju might get in there too. Maybe.
Juju, yeah.
Like
just for the attitude.
Darius Rogers was an incredible blocking receiver. So is Juju.
Now that you say it, I think I would have Juju in there because you get the best of both worlds where you have an outstanding receiver, but also like a very willing, forceful, effective blocker for Juju.
Yeah. And then you go, I still have Reggie. But you take off a receiver or something. You get two running backs and a fullback. The fullback is tough.
Do I put Stanley Havili in
there? I feel
like
it's got to be Stanley Havili. But if it's going to be run focused, do you make the argument to go with like a Kurtman or a Hancock or even a Red Ellison? Or a Ryan Poudrell?
Red Ellison. Hold on. Rhett Ellison is my H-back. Instead of a fullback, I'll do an H-back with Rhett Ellison. I'll do Reggie and Rojo.
So you're not going to do Lindale?
No.
I think I'd have Reggie and Lindale just as my backs. It'd be hard not to have Rojo, though.
I want Rojo in there.
I'd want Rojo also. I'd want all three. With Stanley Havili and Riddell. I want everybody. Yeah. I want everybody.
Just having 11 running backs on the field.
But I think the biggest change is receiver. Like you would not need Marquise Lee or Robert Woods.
You don't need three receivers.
No.
Where most, I think we effectively set up with.
Does the tight end change? You still roll with Fred Davis? I think so, right?
I think so, but maybe I'm tempted to put Rhett Ellison at tight end.
So then you can use Rhett and then still Stanley?
Yeah, and then I can get Stanley. Mm. And that way I'm losing the receiving threat of Fred Davis, but I'm adding sort of like Rhett Ellison plus Stanley Havili are still receiving threats, just not on the level of Fred Davis, but I'm adding sort of that level of blocking ability.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Let's go to questions we got in the chat tonight. Kenny says, imagine the home field apparel for the Bug Eaters.
They should already have it. Yeah.
I mean, they haven't been the Bug Eaters since 1899, but like figure out a way. Make it happen. Greg says, did you see the picture of Pete Carroll and Jakeem Stewart over at the Elite 11?
Yeah, Pete Carroll is at Elite 11. That's cool to see him back in a sort of a college football realm. Is he recruiting for USC? I doubt it, but like...
He's not recruiting.
He's not recruiting for USC, yeah. That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think, and any... Just having him around, I think, absolutely helps. Yeah. Greg also says, what offense are you running in CFB 25?
I used to always do, like, I would always have fun with a triple option.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly this game, they put a lot of work into making the option work. So I think I might triple option it up.
Wow. All right. You might triple option it up. I am going to stick to my tried and true. It's NCAA football, college football, whatever. Are we going to call it CFB? What are we calling it?
I'm calling it CFB 25.
Okay. CFB 25. Run and gun was always what I liked. Run and gun, because you would have sort of the best of both worlds. Like, you'd have some option plays. You'd have a spread passing attack. Like, I think that's, you'd have some split backs in there. That was sort of the way to go. I think that absolutely would work. But we'll have to see how the thing goes. What does an air raid look like in the game here? As if you're watching us on YouTube, we've got Jesse Cam up and rolling for you guys now.
Can I tell a quick anecdote about Jesse?
Yes, go ahead.
We were getting ready for the pod, like an hour before we were going to start recording. We were both in here getting our rundown ready. Jessie's laying on that bed. She's super comfortable. She's laying on that bed. I get up and leave. I come back in. She goes back in and lays on the bed. 5 minutes before the podcast is going to start, Michael gets up and leaves. Jesse follows him out. Michael comes back in. Where does Jesse lay down? Behind the camera.
Yeah, the camera's on a tripod and she's right behind it.
Yeah.
So but now she's back.
She did make her way back to be the center of attention.
Yeah, she is back there. Chat loves it. Jessica says, "Oh, Jesse Cam." Kenny says hello. It's good. It's good that she finally gets her little place there. Kenny also asked, "Does Pete run them out of the tunnel this year?" I think that's a good call. I didn't think about it.
They've got to get him.
Yeah, you would think.
What game would you have him do that?
Okay, SES 6 home games. Let's name 6 people. It should be.
Oh, I like this.
I think there are one person is guaranteed to do it once.
Reggie?
Juju Watkins.
Yes.
Guaranteed to do it once. Like, easily. Hands down, there's no way she's not doing it.
Yeah, she'll be available at that time in the fall because the season won't start until late. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Juju Watkins, 100%. You got to have Reggie. You got to, I think having Reggie versus Notre Dame.
Okay.
Pete versus Nebraska.
I could get with it. Homecoming. Or is Reggie the homecoming game?
What is homecoming? Well, because
homecoming
is
Nebraska.
Yeah. I have Pete for homecoming, to be honest. I still do Reggie for Notre Dame.
Okay.
Just for the lulz. You could get Reggie and Matt. No, Reggie's going to do it alone. But like in theory, in future years, Reggie and Matt against Notre Dame would be real fun.
Mm-hmm.
So Pete against Nebraska. Then you've got Rutgers, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Utah State.
Right.
I probably Juju Watkins as early as possible because, you don't want to get in the way of her, her offseason prep and all that kind of stuff. So let's do Utah State for Juju.
Okay.
Now you got Wisconsin, Penn State, and Rutgers. Do we know what the bye week for the Bears is yet?
So I'm looking it up. The Bears play the Rams the day after SC's Wisconsin home game. But that's in Chicago. So that isn't where it work. Bears bye week. Let's just search this. Let's see. The Bears bye week this week is week 8, which is the 20th, which would be at Maryland. Maybe he goes to that game.
But he's not running out of the tunnel.
Right.
Okay. Then.
So it there's not really a game. They Thursday. They play one Thursday game is on Christmas Day, is on Thanksgiving. So that doesn't really work either. I don't know if there's a game that makes sense for him then. unfortunately.
I wish the list of NFL bye weeks I had would show the week as well, like the dates in addition to the week number.
How about Jordan Addison for the Rutgers game? SC plays that game on Friday the 25th of October,
mm-hmm.
the day after the Rams play the Vikings at home.
I like it.
You can see it, right? You can see it.
I like it. I dig it. So Jordan Addison for Friday against Rutgers.
Yeah.
So we need two more.
Two more. I don't know.
You could always pull, you know, guys who are out of the league now.
They could always, you know, put two of their Mike Williams. I don't know. Mike Williams is on the staff now or doing something, right? I don't know. They could get somebody in there. Either way, Pete Carroll, I expect Pete Carroll to absolutely be there. Kenny says Amon-Ra could be one. It would be great if Amon-Ra was back. He could be one of those guys. I'm pulling up the Lions schedule right now. What's the Lions?
Their bye is week five, the second
Minnesota game. Minnesota on the road.
It's a week too late.
They play back-to-back Thursday games. He could do the Notre Dame game. He could do the Notre Dame game because that Thursday they play Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but again, I still want Reggie for the Notre Dame game.
Sure,
so.
Sure. He also could. I mean, no, that's playing the Rams in Detroit.
What if it's
either way?
Jordan Addison and Sam Darnold for the.
There we go. That would be a combo.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them playing together?
Well, they are going to play together this year.
Yeah, but so. Like no, it at SC. I mean,
that's true. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Uh-oh, we've lost Jessie.
Oh dear.
We've lost her, which means
she's literally laying next to the bed because apparently she knew that the screen was on her. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap us up for today. We'll be back next week on the 26th, the day of the NBA draft. So we'll be back then. Talk more USC football talk and so much more. Stay tuned to our YouTube channel. If you aren't subscribed, make sure that you do subscribe because a bunch of content coming your way. And follow us on the Tiki Talkie and all that kind of stuff. So until next time, we will see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.